This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca, iTunes, and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Autoethnography is research, writing, story, and method that connect the autobiographical and personal to the cultural, social, and political. An autoethnography is a reflexive account of one's own experiences situated in culture. Autoethnography is becoming more widely used in performance studies. The sociology of new media, novels, journalism, and communication, and in applied fields such as management studies.
Carolyn Ellis is a professor of communications and sociology at University of South Florida and the leading proponent of autoethnography. She's the author of a range of books and articles related to the subject, including The Ethnographic Eye, a methodological novel about autoethnography. Here's the first part of our conversation with Carolyn Ellis, first broadcast on People First Radio, June the 17th, 2010. Welcome to People First Radio, Carolyn.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
In your book, The Ethnographic Eye, which I'm enjoying very much, by the way,
thank you.
You describe your own use of autoethnography as follows, quote, "I start with my personal life and pay attention to my physical feelings, thoughts, and emotions. I use what I call systematic sociological introspection and emotional recall to try to understand an experience I've lived through. Then I write my experience as a story." Tell us more about the process of autoethnography.
It has really two parts to me. The first part is to try to re-experience what you have felt in the past, but now from an aesthetic distance where you know you're not actually in the experience, so you know that at any point, if the experience becomes overwhelming, you can pull yourself out of it. So that gives you courage to enter an experience more deeply than you might otherwise. So you try to enter that experience, put your body and your mind into the experience, and try to recall what that felt like, what you were thinking and feeling. And then you try to write from deep in that experience. And you may at some time feel, you will feel emotion. I have at times been crying while I was writing this. So I have felt very deeply what I had gone through in the past. That's the first part of the experience. The second part of the experience then is to bring yourself out of the experience and look back at what you've written almost as though it's somebody else's experience. And at that point, you then need to analyze what was going on and think it through. And second, you need to go back through and edit and write it now for the people who are going to be reading it. The first time through, you're really writing it for yourself, and it becomes somewhat therapeutic. The second time through, you're really trying to communicate that experience to your audience.
Where did autoethnography come from? Where are its origins?
Well, there had been a few anthropologists who had actually used the word, although they were not speaking about starting from your personal experience. They were really talking about studying groups that you happen to be a part of. And for me, that is still part of autoethnography, but we have expanded the concept of autoethnography to include everything from actually writing about your personal experience to writing about other people that you might be doing studies of, but including your own actions and thoughts and feelings in that writing. So as ethnographers, we do write about other people, but since we're using our own bodies as the instrument, we always are present in these studies, and we're always observing the participation between the people we're observing and ourselves. So we become part of what we are observing.
Carolyn, there seems to be a continuum in the way autoethnography is defined and practiced, from an emphasis on the analytical and scientific nature of it, of autoethnography at one end, to the artistic and, as you often have used in your book, the evocative nature of the autoethnographic process on the other. Tell us more about that that range of autoethnography.
Okay, that is very interesting. I tend to work at the interface of social science and humanities, though I was educated as a social scientist. But it became clear to me that it would be very useful, and I was very interested in trying to capture emotions, express emotionality, which is something that social scientists often leave out of their studies. And it seemed to me the best way to do that, if I wanted to evoke other people's emotions, which I did, it's to me the best way of doing that was to try to write in a literary way that would evoke them to feel what I had felt, or to think about what they might feel in the same situations or what they had felt in the past. So I have gradually moved from a more social science examination of emotions to a more literary, artistic examination of emotions. But there are people who do autoethnography from a much more scientific and traditional point of view. And while they might include their own experience in their studies, they want to make it clear that the emphasis is on other people and that the emphasis is on analyzing the experience rather than showing it in a literary way, as I try to do it.
This is People First Radio, only on CHLY 101.7 FM and streaming at chly.ca. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.
Autoethnography refers to writing about the personal and its relationship to culture. It's an autobiographical genre of writing and research that displays multiple layers of consciousness. We spoke with the foremost proponent of autoethnography, Professor Carolyn Ellis, in an interview first broadcast on our program on June 10th, 2010. Here's the second half of that conversation with Carolyn Ellis.
Carolyn Ellis, you provide multiple examples of autoethnographic research in your book, The Ethnographic Eye, and you've been involved in many studies. You've written that intervention and change are not primary purposes of the research, but that sometimes they're byproducts of good writing. What are some of the effects of autoethnography, and have autoethnographies made a difference in a larger scale?
Well, I myself and many of our students have written about their own illnesses, losses, and traumas. And I see autoethnography, as you said, having a social justice and social change component, but it is not linked to, say, a social movement per se, but it is linked to social change occurring one person at a time. So, for example, if I have a student who writes about her eating disorder, my hope is that the writing process itself will be therapeutic, and I do find that to be the case. The writing and having people respond to the writing, as well as having other people then share their stories about the same kind of problem, so that you find that you are not alone in the world and there are other people who have the same feelings, same experiences as you do. And often it can be then the conversations that ensue can be therapeutic. My hope is also that I think personal narratives really have a lot of influence on change and on our perception. So while it might be difficult to get a grant doing autoethnography, it's interesting to me that every time there's some kind of traumatic event in the world, whether it's Katrina, the oil spill, 9/11, whatever, they may start with the statistics and the analysis, but they move pretty quickly to personal stories. And the personal stories seem to me to be what stay with people and what often can lead to social change by if the person who hears the story is impacted by the personal story, then often they might then become active in change.
In the ethnographic eye, you also point out through Laura, one of the characters in the book, that autoethnography doesn't always contribute to good research. What are some of the limitations in the research method?
Well, I think every research method has limitations and strengths. Certainly autoethnography has limitations. I mean, I could give you the whole litany of critiques that autoethnography gets, such as it's not generalizable and so forth. My response to that critique is that if what I write about is not generalizable, it won't have much impact. It won't do much. It will kind of die death. But when I think about generalizability, I'm not thinking about generalizability in terms of random sample and populations. What I'm thinking about is in terms of the person who takes in the story, does it resonate with their experience? And so I think about generalizability in terms of the people hearing the story and whether it resonates with them, rather than representation. So that's, you know, that's, but that is one limitation. You can't generalize to a population. We really are involved in showing the particularities of experience rather than the typicalities, and we're interested in uniqueness rather than generalizability to the whole population.
Carolyn Ellis, we have just a moment left. I'm wondering if there's anything else that you'd like to add to our conversation today.
Well, I'm just very excited that you're interested in autoethnography. I've been working in autoethnography for 20, 25 years, and I have found it extremely life-changing for myself as well as for other people who do autoethnography. However, not everyone can do autoethnography. You have to be able to write well, and I also think that there are people who probably should not attempt autoethnography but should be going to therapy. On the other hand, there are a lot of just day-to-day, daily life problems that we all encounter, and I think that autoethnography can be a useful tool in our tool chest to just kind of help us cope day-to-day and help us see our connections to other people who may have some things to help us with and teach us and experiences to share that are similar to ours.
Well, thank you very much, Carolyn Ellis, for taking the time to join us today.
You're very welcome, and thank you for concentrating on this topic.
Dr. Carolyn Ellis is considered the foremost proponent of autoethnography and is a professor of sociology and communications with the University of South Florida. Her current research projects investigate autoethnography, narrative writing, and issues of illness and loss. You can find her book, The Ethnographic Eye, online at Amazon.ca.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.